Laffer cringed as Lysandra, panting, gaped at Lorkin, and at the blood on his neck and chest. Slowly, too slowly, Lorkin looked down at himself. She pressed a hand over her mouth.
I am so sorry.
Lorkin didn't even step out of the way as Lysandra vomited on him again. Black blood and bits of gore now on the warrior and on the marble floor. Lorkin's dark eyes flickered. Rowan decided to do them both a favor and joined them in the antechamber, shutting the queen's bedroom door behind him as he stepped around the puddle of blood, bile, and gore. Lysandra gagged again, and wisely darted to what looked to be a bathing room off the foyer. All of the men and demons she'd wasted, it seemed, did not sit well in her human stomach. The sounds of her purging leaked out from beneath the bathing room door.
You deserved that, Rowan said.
Lorkin didn't so much as blink.
That's the thanks I get.
Rowan leaned against the wall, crossing his arms and keeping the weight off his now healing leg.
You knew we'd tried to use those tunnels, Rowan said. And yet you lied about the word hounds being dead. I should rip out your god's damned throat.
Go ahead.
Try.
Rowan remained against the door, calculating every move of his former commander. A fight right here, right now, would be too destructive, and too dangerous with his queen unconscious in the room behind him.
I wouldn't have given a shit about it if it had just been me. But when you let me walk into that trap, you endangered my queen's life.
Looks like she did just fine.
And the life of a brother in my court.
Lorkin's mouth tightened. Barely.
That's why you came to help, isn't it?
Rowan said.
You saw Adian when we left the apartment. I did not know Gavriel's son would be in that tunnel with you. Until it was too late.
Of course. Lorkin would never have warned them about the trap after learning Adian would be there. Not in 1,000 years would Lorkin ever admit to a mistake.
I wasn't aware that you even cared.
Gavriel is still my brother,
Lorkin said, his eyes flashing.
I would have faced him with dishonor if I had let his son die.
Only for honor, for the blood bond between them, not for saving this continent. The same twisted bond was leading him now to destroy the keys before Maeve could acquire them. Rowan had no doubt that Lorkin meant to do it, even if Maeve killed him for it later.
What are you doing here, Lorkin? Didn't you get what you wanted?
A fair question, and a warning. The male was now inside his queen's suite, closer than most people in her court would ever get. Rowan began a silent countdown in his head. 30 seconds seemed generous. Then he would throw Lorkin out on his ass.
It's not over, the warrior said. Not even close.
Rowan lifted his brows.
Idle threats.
But Lorkin had only shrugged and walked out, covered in Lysandra's vomit, and did not look back before disappearing down the hall. That had been 3 days ago. Rowan hadn't seen or scented Lorkin since. Lysandra mercifully had stopped hurling her guts up, or someone else's guts, he supposed. The shapeshifter had claimed a room across the hall, between the two chambers in which the Crown Prince and Kaol still slept. After what Aelin and the Crown Prince had done, the magic they'd wielded together and alone, 3 days of sleep was hardly surprising. Yet it drove Rowan out of his mind. There were so many things he needed to say to her, though perhaps he would just ask how the hell she'd gotten stabbed in the side. She'd healed herself, and he wouldn't have even known were it not for the rips in the ribs, back, and arms of that black assassin's suit. When the healer had inspected the sleeping queen, she'd found that Aelin had healed herself too quickly, too desperately, and had sealed her flesh around some shards of glass in her back, watching as the healer stripped her naked, then began carefully opening the dozens of little wounds to dig out the glass, almost made him tear down the walls. Aelin slept through it, which he supposed was a mercy, given how deep the healer had to dig to get the glass out.
She's lucky it didn't hit anything permanent,
the healer had said. Once every shard was gone, Rowan had used his strained magic to slowly, so slowly, damn him, heal the wounds again, It left the tattoo on her back in ribbons. He'd have to fill it in when she recovered, and teach her more about battlefield healing, if she ever woke up. Sitting in a chair beside her bed, Rowan towed off his boots and rubbed at the faint, lingering soreness in his leg. Adian had just finished giving a report about the current status of the castle. 3 days later, the general still hadn't spoken about what had happened, that he'd been willing to lay down his life to protect Rowan from the Volg foot soldiers, or that the King of Otterlin was dead. As far as the former, Rowan had thanked him for that in the only way he knew how, offering Adian one of his own daggers, forged by the greatest of Dorinel's blacksmiths. Adian had initially refused, insisting he needed no thanks, but had worn the blade at his side ever since. But in regard to the latter, Rowan had asked just once what the general felt about the king being dead. Adian had merely said he wished the bastard had suffered longer. But dead was dead, so it was fine by him. Rowan wondered if he truly meant it. But Adian would tell him when he was good and ready. Not all wounds could be healed with magic. Rowan knew that too well. But they did heal. Eventually. And the wounds on this castle, on the city, those would heal too. He'd stood on battlefields after the killing had stopped, the earth still wet with blood, and lived to see the scars slowly heal, decade after decade, on the land, the people. So too would Rifthold heal. Even if Adian's latest report on the castle was grim, most of the staff had survived, along with a few courtiers. But it seemed that a good number of those who had remained at court, courtiers Adian had known to be worthless scheming devils, hadn't made it, as if the prince had wiped clean the stain from his castle. Rowan shuddered at the thought, gazing at the doors Adian had vacated. The crown prince had such tremendous power. Rowan had never seen its like. He'd need to find a way to train it, hone it, or risk it destroying him. And Aelin, that brilliant, insane fool, had taken a tremendous risk in weaving her power with his. The prince had raw magic that could be shaped into anything. Aelin could have burnt herself out in a second. Rowan turned his head and glared at her, and found Aelin glaring back.
"I save the world," Aelin said, her voice like gravel, "and yet I wake up to you being pissy."
"It was a group effort," Rowan said from a chair nearby. "And I'm pissy for about 20 different reasons, most of them having to do with you making some of the most reckless decisions I've ever..."
"Dorian," she blurted. "Is Dorian..."
"Fine. Asleep. He's been out as long as you."
"Kael?"
"Asleep. Recovering, but alive."
A weight eased from her shoulders. And then, she looked at the Fae Prince and understood that he was unharmed, that she was in her old room, that they weren't in chains or collars, and that the king, what the king had said before he died.
"Fireheart,"
Rowan murmured, starting from his chair. But she shook her head. The movement made her skull throb.
She took a steadying breath, wiping at her eyes.
Gods, her arm ached. Her back ached. Her side ached.
"No more tears," she said. "No more weeping."
She lowered her hands to the blankets.
"Tell me everything."
So he did. About the Hellfire, and the Wordhounds, and Lorcan. And then the past 3 days, of organizing and healing. And Lysandra scaring the living shit out of everyone by shifting into a ghost leopard any time one of Dorian's courtiers stepped out of line. When he'd finished, Rowan said,
"If you can't talk about it, you don't..."
"I need to talk about it."
To him. If only to him. The words tumbled out, and she did not cry as she explained what the king had said, what he'd claimed, what Dorian had still done. Rowan's face remained drawn, thoughtful throughout. At last she said,
"3 days?"
Rowan nodded gravely.
"Distracting Adian with running the castle is the only way I've kept him from chewing on the furniture."
She met those pine-green eyes, and he opened his mouth again. But she made a small noise.
"Before we say anything else, She glanced at the door. I need you to help me get to the bathing room, or else I'm going to wet myself.
Rowan burst out laughing. She glared at him again as she sat up, the movement agonizing, exhausting. She was naked, save for the clean undergarments someone had stuffed her into. But she supposed she was decent enough. He'd seen every part of her anyway. Rowan was still chuckling as he helped her up, letting her lean against him as her legs, useless, wobbling like a newborn fawn, tried to work. It took her so long to go 3 steps that she didn't object when he swept her up and carried her to the bathing room. She growled when he tried to set her on the toilet itself, and he left with his hands upraised, his eyes dancing as if to say, "Can you blame me for trying? You might very well fall into it instead." He laughed once more at the profanities in her eyes. And when she was done, she managed to stand and walk the 3 steps to the door before he hefted her in his arms again. No limp, she realized. His leg, mercifully, was mostly healed. Her arms draped around him. She pressed her face into his neck as he carried her toward the bed and breathed in his scent. When he made to set her down, she held on to him, a silent request. So Rowan sat on the bed, holding her in his lap as he stretched out his legs, and settled into the rows of pillows. For a moment, they said nothing. Then,
"So this was your room, and that was the secret passage?"
"A lifetime ago, a whole other person ago. You don't sound impressed."
"After all your stories, it just seems so ordinary."
"Most people would hardly call this castle ordinary." A huff of laughter warmed her hair. She grazed her nose against the bare skin of his neck.
"I thought you were dying,"
he said roughly. She held him tighter, even if it made her back ache. "I was."
"Please don't ever do that again."
It was her turn to puff out a laugh. "Next time I'll just ask Dorian not to stab me." But Rowan pulled back, scanning her face.
"I felt it. I felt every second of it. I went out of my mind."
She brushed a finger along his cheek. "I thought something had gone wrong for you, too. I thought you might be dead or hurt, and it killed me not to be able to go to you."
"Next time we need to save the world, we do it together."
She smiled faintly. "Deal." He shifted his arm so he could brush her hair back. His fingers lingered along her jaw.
"You make me want to live too, Aelin Galathinius,"
he said.
"Not exist, but live."
He cupped her cheek and took a steadying breath, as if he'd thought about every word these past 3 days, over and over again.
"I spent centuries wandering the world, from empires to kingdoms to wastelands, never settling, never stopping, not for one moment. I was always looking toward the horizon, always wondering what waited across the next ocean, over the next mountain. But I think that whole time, all those centuries, I was just looking for you."
He brushed away a tear that escaped her then, and Aelin gazed at the Fae Prince who held her, at her friend, who had traveled through darkness and despair and ice and fire with her. She didn't know which one of them moved first, but then Rowan's mouth was on hers, and Aelin gripped his shirt, pulling him closer, claiming him as he claimed her. His arms wrapped tighter around her, but gently, so careful of the wounds that ached. He brushed his tongue against hers, and she opened her mouth to him. Every movement of their lips was a whisper of what was to come once they were both healed, and a promise. The kiss was slow, thorough, as if they had all the time in the world, as if they were the only ones in it. Realizing he'd forgotten to tell Rowan about the letter he'd received from the Bane, Adie and Ashriver walked into Aelin's suite of rooms in time to see that Aelin was awake, finally awake, and lifting her face to Rowan's. They were sitting on the bed, Aelin in Rowan's lap, the Fae warrior's arms locked around her, as he looked at her the way she deserved to be looked at. And when they kissed, deeply, without hesitation,
Rowan didn't so much as glance Adian's way before a wind snapped through the suite, slamming the bedroom door in Adian's face. Point taken. A strange, ever-changing female scent hit him, and Adian found Lysandra leaning against the hallway door. Tears gleamed in her eyes even as she smiled. She gazed at the closed bedroom door, as if she could still see the prince and queen inside.
"That,"
she said, more to herself than to him.
"That is what I am going to find one day."
"A gorgeous fey warrior," Adian said, shifting a bit. Lysandra chuckled, wiping away her tears, and gave him a knowing look before walking away. Apparently, Dorian's golden ring was gone, and Aelin knew exactly who had been responsible for the momentary blackness when she'd hit the ground as the castle collapsed, who had bestowed the unconsciousness, courtesy of a blow to the back of her head. She didn't know why Lorcan hadn't killed her, but she didn't particularly care. Not when he was long gone. She supposed he'd never promised not to steal the ring back. Though he'd also never made them verify that the amulet of Orinth wasn't a fake. Too bad she wouldn't be there to see his face when he realized it. The thought was enough to make Aelin smile the next day, despite the door she stood before. Despite who waited behind it. Rowan lingered at the end of the hallway, guarding the only way in or out. He gave her a nod, and even from the distance she read the words in his eyes.
"I'll be right here. One shout, and I'll be at your side."
She rolled her eyes at him.
Overbearing territorial fey beast.
She'd lost track of how long they'd kissed for, how long she'd lost herself in him. But then she'd taken his hand and laid it on her breast, and he'd growled in a way that made her toes curl and her back arch. And then wince at the remnant of pain flickering in her body. He had pulled back at that wince, and when she tried to convince him to keep going, he'd told her that he had no interest in betting an invalid, and since they'd already waited this long, she could cool her heels and wait some more. Until she was able to keep up with him, he'd added with a wicked grin. Aelin shoved away the thought with another glare in Rowan's direction, loosed a steadying breath, and pushed down on the handle. He was standing by the window, overlooking the wrecked gardens where servants were struggling to repair the catastrophic damage he'd caused.
"Hello, Dorian," she said.
Chapter 84. Dorian Havilliard had awoken alone, in a room he didn't recognize. But he was free, even though a pale band of skin now marred his neck. For a moment, he had lain in bed, listening. No screaming, no wailing, just a few birds tentatively chirping outside the window, summer sunshine leaking in, and silence, peace. There was such an emptiness in his head, a hollowness in him. He'd even put a hand over his heart to see if it was beating. The rest was a blur, and he lost himself in it, rather than think about that emptiness. He bathed, he dressed, and he spoke to Adian Ashriver, who looked at him as if he had three heads, and who was apparently now in charge of castle security. Kaol was alive but still recovering, the general said, not yet awake, and maybe that was a good thing, because Dorian had no idea how he'd face his friend, how he'd explain everything. Even when most of it was mere shards of memory, pieces he knew would further break him if he ever put them together. A few hours later, Dorian was still in that bedroom, working up the nerve to survey what he'd done, the castle he'd destroyed, the people he'd killed. He'd seen the wall, proof of his enemy's power and mercy. Not his enemy. Aelin.
"Hello, Dorian," she said.
He turned from the window as the door shut behind her. She lingered by the door, in a tunic of deep blue and gold, unbuttoned with careless grace at the neck, her hair loose at her shoulders, her brown boots scuffed. But the way she held herself, the way she stood with utter stillness, a queen looked out at him. He didn't know what to say, where to begin.
She prowled for the little sitting area where he stood. How are you feeling? Even the way she talked was slightly different. He'd already heard what she'd said to his people, the threats she'd made and the order she'd demanded.
Fine,
he managed to say. His magic rumbled deep inside him, but it was barely more than a whisper, as if it was drained, as if it was as empty as him. You wouldn't be hiding in here, would you? She said, slumping into one of the low chairs on the pretty ornate rug.
Your men put me in here so they could keep an eye on me, he said, remaining by the window. I wasn't aware that I was allowed to leave.
Perhaps that was a good thing, considering what the demon prince had made him do. You can leave whenever you please. This is your castle, your kingdom.
Is it?
He dared ask. You're the king of Otterland now, she said softly, but not gently. Of course it is.
His father was dead.
Not even a body was left to reveal what they'd done that day. Aelin had publicly declared she'd killed him, but Dorian knew he'd ended his father when he shattered the castle. He had done it for Kaol, and for Sorsha, and he knew she'd claimed the kill because to tell his people that he'd killed his father.
I still have to be crowned,
he said at last. His father had stated such wild things in those last few moments, things that changed everything and nothing. She crossed her legs, leaning back in her seat, but there was nothing casual in her face. You say that like you hope it doesn't happen. Dorian stifled the urge to touch his neck and confirm that the collar was still gone, and clenched his hands behind his back.
Do I deserve to be king after all I did? After all that happened?
Only you can answer that question.
Do you believe what he said?
Aelin sucked on her teeth. I don't know what to believe.
Parrington's going to war with me. With us. My being king won't stop that army.
We'll figure it out, she loosed a breath. But your being king is the first step of it. Beyond the window, the day was bright, clear. The world had ended and begun anew. And yet nothing at all had changed, either. The sun would still rise and fall, the seasons would still change, heedless of whether he was free or enslaved, prince or king. Heedless of who was alive and who was gone, the world would keep moving on. It didn't seem right, somehow.
She died,
he said, his breathing ragged, the room crushing him.
Because of me.
Aelin got to her feet in a smooth movement, and walked to where he stood by the window, only to tug him down onto the sofa beside her. It is going to take a while, and it might never be right again, but you... She gripped his hand, as if he hadn't used those hands to hurt and maim, to stab her. You will learn to face it, and to endure it. What happened, Dorian, was not your fault.
It was. I tried to kill you, and what happened to Kaol?
Kaol chose. He chose to buy you time because your father was to blame, your father, and the Volg Prince inside him did that to you, and to Sorsha. He almost vomited at the name. It would dishonor her to never say it again. To never speak of her again. But he didn't know if he could let out those two syllables without a part of him dying over and over again. You're not going to believe me, Aelin went on. What I've just said. You're not going to believe me. I know it, and that's fine. I don't expect you to. When you're ready, I'll be here.
You're the Queen of Terrasen. You can't be.
Says who? We are the masters of our own fates. We decide how to go forward. She squeezed his hand. You're my friend, Dorian. A flicker of memory, from the haze of darkness and pain, and fear. I came back for you.
You both came back, he said.
Her throat bobbed. You pulled me out of Endovir. I figured I could return the favor. Dorian looked at the carpet. At all the threads woven together.
What do I do now?
They were gone. The woman he'd loved. And the man he'd hated. He met her stare. No calculation. No coldness. No pity in those turquoise eyes. Just unflinching honesty.
as there had been from the very start with her.
What do I do?
She had to swallow before she said, "You light up the darkness." Kaol Westfall opened his eyes. The afterworld looked an awful lot like a bedroom in the stone castle. There was no pain in his body, at least. Not like the pain that had slammed into him, followed by warring blackness and blue light, and then nothing at all. He might have yielded to the exhaustion that threatened to drag him back into unconsciousness. But someone, a man, let out a rasping breath, and Kaol turned his head. There were no sounds, no words in him as he found Dorian seated in a chair beside the bed. Bruised shadows were smudged beneath his eyes. His hair was unkempt, as if he'd been running his hands through it. But beyond his unbuttoned jacket, there was no collar, only a pale line marring his golden skin. And his eyes, haunted, but clear, alive. Kaol's vision burned and blurred. She had done it. Aelin had done it. Kaol's face crumpled.
"I didn't realize I looked that bad," Dorian said, his voice raw.
He knew then that the demon inside the prince was gone. Kaol wept. Dorian surged from the chair and dropped to his knees beside the bed. He grabbed Kaol's hand, squeezing it as he pressed his brow against his.
"You were dead,"
the prince said, his voice breaking.
"I thought you were dead."
Kaol at last mastered himself, and Dorian pulled back far enough to scan his face.
"I think I was,"
he said.
"What? What happened?"
So Dorian told him. Aelin had saved his city. And saved his life, too, when she'd slipped the Eye of Elaena into his pocket. Dorian's hand gripped Kaol's a bit tighter.
"How do you feel?" "Tired,"
Kaol admitted, flexing his free hand. His chest ached from where the blast had hit him, but the rest of him felt... he didn't feel anything. He couldn't feel his legs, his toes.
"The healers that survived,"
Dorian said very quietly,
"said you shouldn't even be alive. Your spine... I think my father broke it in a few places. They said Amethy might have been able to..."
A flicker of rage.
"But she died."
Panic, slow and icy, crept in. He couldn't move, couldn't...
"Rowan healed two of the injuries higher up. You would have been... paralyzed,"
Dorian choked on the word.
"From the neck down, otherwise. But the lower fracture... Rowan said it was too complex, and he didn't dare try to heal it, not when he could make it worse." "Tell me there's a but coming,"
Kaol managed to say. If he couldn't walk, if he couldn't move.
"We won't risk sending you to Wendlin, not with Maeve there. But the healers at the Torre Chesme could do it." "I'm not going to the southern continent."
Not now that he'd gotten Dorian back. Not now that they'd all somehow survived.
"I'll wait for a healer here." "There are no healers left here. Not magically gifted ones. My father and Parrington wiped them out."
Cold flickered in those sapphire eyes. Kaol knew that what his father had claimed, what Dorian had still done to him despite it, would haunt the prince for a while. Not the prince, the king.
"The Torre Chesme might be your only hope of walking again,"
Dorian said.
"I'm not leaving you. Not again."
Dorian's mouth tightened.
"You never left me, Kaol."
He shook his head once, sending tears slipping down his face.
"You never left me."
Kaol squeezed his friend's hand. Dorian glanced toward the door a moment before a hesitant knock sounded, and smiled faintly. Kaol wondered just what Dorian's magic allowed him to detect. But then the king wiped away his tears and said,
"Someone's here to see you."
The handle quietly lowered, and the door cracked open, revealing a curtain of inky black hair and a tan, pretty face. Nezrin beheld Dorian and bowed deeply, her hair swaying with her. Dorian rose to his feet, waving a hand in dismissal.
"Adian might be the new head of castle security, but Miss Felique is my temporary captain of the guard."
Turns out the guards find Adian's style of leadership to be... What's the word, Nezrin? Nezrin's mouth twitched, but her eyes were on Kaol, as if he were a miracle, as if he were an illusion. Polarizing, Nezrin murmured, striding right for him, her gold and crimson uniform fitting her like a glove. There's never been a woman in the King's Guard before, Dorian said, heading for the door. And since you're now Lord Kaol Westfall the King's Hand, I needed someone to fill the position. New traditions for a new reign. Kaol broke Nezrin's wide-eyed stare to gape at his friend.
What?
But Dorian was at the door, opening it.
If I have to be stuck with king duty, then you're going to be stuck right there with me. So go to the Torre Chesme and heal fast, Kaol. Because we've got work to do.
The king's gaze flicked to Nezrin.
Fortunately, you already have a knowledgeable guide.
Then he was gone. Kaol stared up at Nezrin, who was holding a hand over her mouth.
Turns out I wound up breaking my promise to you after all,
he said,
since I technically can't walk out of this castle.
She burst into tears.
Remind me never to make a joke again,
he said, even as the crushing, squeezing panic set in.
His legs.
No.
No.
They wouldn't be sending him to the Torre Chesme unless they knew there was a possibility he would walk again. He would accept no other alternative.
Nezrin's thin shoulders shook as she wept. Nezrin,
he croaked.
Nezrin, please.
She slid onto the floor beside his bed and buried her face in her hands.
When the castle shattered,
she said, her voice cracking.
I thought you were dead, and when I saw the glass coming for me, I thought I'd be dead. But then the fire came, and I prayed she'd somehow saved you, too.
Rowan had been the one who'd done that, but Kaol wasn't about to correct her. She lowered her hands, at last looking at his body beneath the blankets.
We will fix this. We will go to the southern continent, and I will make them heal you. I've seen the wonders they can do. And I know they can do it, and...
He reached for her hand.
Nezrin.
And now you're a lord, she went on, shaking her head. You were a lord before, I mean, but you are the king's second in command. I know we...
We'll figure it out,
Kaol said. She met his stare at last.
I don't expect anything of you.
We'll figure it out. You might not even want a crippled man.
She pulled back.
Do not insult me by assuming I'm that shallow or fickle.
He choked on a laugh.
Let's have an adventure, Nezrin Falik.
Chapter 85 Alid couldn't stop crying as the witches flew northward. She didn't care that she was flying, or that death loomed on every side. What Kaltain had done... She didn't dare open her clenched fist for fear the fabric and the little stone would be ripped away in the wind. At sunset, they landed somewhere in Oakwald. Alid didn't care about that, either. She lay down and passed into a deep sleep, still wearing Kaltain's dress, that bit of cloak clutched in her hand. Someone covered her with a cloak in the night, and when she awoke, there was a set of clothes, flying leathers, a shirt... Pants, boots, beside her. The witches were sleeping, their wyverns a mass of muscle and death around them. None of them stirred as Alid strode to the nearest stream, stripped off that dress, and sat in the water, watching the two pieces of her loose chain swaying in the current, until her teeth were chattering. When she had dressed, the clothes a bit big but warm, Alid tucked that scrap of cloak and the stone it contained into one of her inner pockets. Selena Sardothian. She'd never heard that name. Didn't know where to start looking. But to repay the debt she owed Kaltain.
Don't waste your tears on her,
Manon said from a few feet away, a pack dangling from her clean hands. She must have washed off the blood and dirt the night before.
She knew what she was doing, and it wasn't for your sake.
Alid wiped at her face.
She still saved our lives. And put an end to those poor witches in the catacombs.
She did it for herself,
to free herself, and she was entitled to. After what they did, she was entitled to rip the entire damn world to shreds. Instead, she'd taken out a third of Morath. Manon was right. Kaltane hadn't cared if they'd cleared the blast.
What do we do now?
We're going back to Morath, Manon said plainly. But you're not. Alid started. This is as far as we can take you without raising suspicions, Manon said. When we return, if your uncle survived, I'll tell him he must have been incinerated in the blast.
And with that blast, all evidence of what Manon and her 13 had done to get Alid out of the dungeons would also have been erased. But to leave her here...
The world opened wide and brutal around her.
Where do I go?
Alid breathed. Endless woods and hills surrounded them.
I can't read, and I have no map.
Go where you will. But if I were you, I'd head north, and stick to the forest. Stay out of the mountains. Keep going until you hit Terrasen.
That had never been part of the plan. But the king, Vernon...
The king of Otterlin is dead, Manon said. The world stopped. Aelin Galathinius killed him and shattered his glass castle.
Alid covered her mouth with a hand, shaking her head. Aelin. Aelin.
She was aided, Manon went on, by Prince Adian Ashriver.
Alid began sobbing.
And rumor has it Lord Ren Alsbrook is working in the north as a rebel.
Alid buried her face in her hands. Then there was a hard, iron-tipped hand on her shoulder. A tentative touch.
Hope, Manon said quietly.
Alid lowered her hands and found the witch smiling at her. Barely a tilt to her lips, but a smile. Soft and lovely.
Alid wondered if Manon even knew she was doing it.
But to go to Terrasen, things will get worse, won't they? Alid said.
Manon's nod was barely perceptible.
South.
She could still go south, run far, far away. Now that Vernon thought she was dead, no one would ever come looking for her.
But Aelin was alive, and strong.
And maybe it was time to stop dreaming of running. Find Selena Sardothian. She would do that, to honor Kaltane and the gift she'd been given. To honor the girls like them. Locked in towers with no one to speak for them. No one who remembered them.
But Manon had remembered her.
No, she would not run. Go north, Alid, Manon said, reading the decision in Alid's eyes and extending the pack. They are in Rifthold, but I bet they won't be there for long. Get to Terrasen and lie low. Keep off the roads, avoid inns. There's money in that pack, but use it sparingly. Lie and steal and cheat if you have to, but get to Terrasen. Your queen will be there. I'd suggest not mentioning your mother's heritage to her.
Alid considered, shouldering the pack. Having Blackbeak blood does not seem like such a horrible thing, she said quietly.
Those gold eyes narrowed.
No, Manon said.
No, it does not.
How can I thank you?
It was a debt already owed, Manon said, shaking her head when Alid opened her mouth to ask more. The witch handed her 3 daggers, showing her where to tuck one into her boot, storing one in her pack, and then sheathing the other at her hip. Finally, she bade Alid to take off her boots, revealing the shackles she'd squeezed inside. Manon removed a small skeleton key and unlocked the chains, still clamped to her ankles. Cool, soft air caressed her bare skin. And Alid bit her lip to keep from weeping again as she tugged her boots back on. Through the trees, the wyverns were yawning and grumbling, and the sounds of the 13 laughing flitted past. Manon looked toward them, that faint smile returning to her mouth. When Manon turned back, the heir of the Blackbeak Witch Clan said, "When war comes, which it will if Parrington survived, you should hope you do not see me again, Alid Lawkin."
All the same, Alid said. I hope I do.
She bowed to the wing leader. And to her surprise, Manon bowed back.
North,
Manon said.
and Alid supposed it was as much of a goodbye as she'd get.
North,
Alid repeated, and set off into the trees. Within minutes, she'd passed beyond the sounds of the witches and their wyverns, and was swallowed up by Oakwald. She gripped the straps of her pack as she walked. Suddenly, the animals went silent, and the leaves rustled and whispered. A moment later, 13 great shadows passed overhead. One of them, the smallest, lingered, sweeping back a second time as if in farewell. Alid didn't know if Abraxos could see through the canopy, but she raised a hand in farewell anyway. A joyous, fierce cry echoed in response, and then the shadow was gone. North. To Terrasen. To fight. Not run. To Aelin and Ren and Adian. Grown and strong. And alive. She did not know how long it would take, or how far she would have to walk. But she would make it. She would not look back. Walking under the trees, the forest buzzing around her, Alid pressed a hand against the pocket inside her leather jacket, feeling the hard little lump tucked there. She whispered a short prayer to Aneth for wisdom, for guidance, and could have sworn a warm hand brushed her brow as if in answer. It straightened her spine, lifted her chin. Limping, Alid began the long journey home. Chapter 86. This is the last of your clothes, Lysandra said, towing the trunk that one of the servants had just dropped off. I thought I had a shopping problem. Don't you ever throw anything away? From her perch on the velvet ottoman in the center of the enormous closet, Aelin stuck out her tongue. Thank you for getting it all, she said. There was no point in unpacking the clothes Lysandra had brought from her old apartment, just as there was no point in returning there. It didn't help that Aelin couldn't bring herself to leave Dorian alone, even if she'd finally managed to get him out of that room and walking around the castle. He looked like the living dead, especially with that white line around his golden throat. She supposed he had every right to. She'd been waiting for him outside of Kaol's room. When she heard Kaol speak at last, she had summoned Nezirin as soon as she'd mastered the tears of relief that had threatened to overwhelm her. After Dorian had emerged, when he'd looked at her, and his smile had crumpled, she'd taken the king right back into his bedroom, and sat with him for a good long while. The guilt. That would be as heavy a burden for Dorian as his grief. Lysandra put her hands on her hips. Any other tasks for me before I retrieve Evangeline tomorrow? Aelin owed Lysandra more than she could begin to express, but she pulled a small box from her pocket. There's one more task, Aelin said, holding the box out to Lysandra. You'll probably hate me for it later, but you can start by saying yes.
Proposing to me? How unexpected.
Lysandra took the box, but didn't open it. Aelin waved a hand, her heart pounding.
Just open it.
With a wary frown, Lysandra opened the lid and cocked her head at the ring inside, the movement purely feline.
Are you proposing to me, Aelin Galathinius?
Aelin held her friend's gaze. There's a territory in the north, a small bit of fertile land that used to belong to the Alsbrook family. Adian took it upon himself to inform me that the Alsbrooks have no use for it. So it's been sitting open for a while. Aelin shrugged. It could use a lady. The blood drained from Lysandra's face.
What?
It's plagued by ghost leopards, hence the engraving on the ring. But I suppose if there were anyone capable of handling them, it'd be you. Lysandra's hands shook.
And the key symbol above the leopard?
To remind you of who now holds your freedom. You. Lysandra covered her mouth, staring at the ring, then at Aelin.
Are you out of your mind?
Most people would probably think so, but as the land was officially released by the Alsbrooks years ago, I can technically appoint you lady of it. With Evangeline as your heir, should you wish it. Her friend had not voiced any plans for herself or her ward beyond retrieving Evangeline, had not asked to come with them, to start over in a new land, a new kingdom. Aelin had hoped it meant she wanted to join them in Terrasen, but Lysandra sank to the carpeted floor, staring at the box, at the ring. I know it'll be a great deal of work.
I don't deserve this. No one will ever want to serve me. Your people will resent you for appointing me.
Aelin slid onto the ground, knee to knee with her friend, and took the box from the shapeshifter's trembling hands. She pulled out the gold ring that she'd commissioned weeks ago. It had only been ready this morning, when Aelin and Rowan had slipped out to retrieve it, along with the real word key.
There is no one who deserves it more, Aelin said,
grabbing her friend's hand and putting the ring on her finger. There is no one else I'd want guarding my back.
If my people cannot see the worth of a woman who sold herself into slavery for the sake of a child, who defended my court with no thought for her own life, then they are not my people, and they can burn in hell.
Lysandra traced a finger over the coat of arms that Aelin had designed.
What's the territory called?
I have no idea, Aelin said. Lysandria sounds good. So does Lysandris, or maybe Lysandriland. Lysandra gaped at her.
You are out of your mind.
Will you accept?
I don't know the first thing about ruling a territory, about being a lady.
Well, I don't know the first thing about ruling a kingdom. We'll learn together. She flashed her a conspirator's grin.
So?
Lysandra gazed at the ring, then lifted her eyes to Aelin's face, and threw her arms around her neck, squeezing tight. She took that as a yes. Aelin grimaced at the dull throb of pain, but held on. Welcome to the court, lady. Aelin honestly wanted nothing more than to climb into bed that evening, hopefully with Rowan beside her. But as they finished up dinner, their first meal together as a court, a knock sounded on the door. Adian was answering it before Aelin could so much as set down her fork. He returned with Dorian in tow, the king glancing between them all.
I wanted to see if you'd eaten.
Aelin pointed with her fork to the empty seat beside Lysandra. Join us.
I don't want to impose.
Sit your ass down, she told the new king of Otterlin. That morning he'd signed a decree freeing all the conquered kingdoms from Otterlin's rule. She'd watched him do it, Adian holding her hand tightly throughout, and wished that Nehemia had been there to see it. Dorian moved to the table, amusement sparking in those haunted sapphire eyes. She introduced him again to Rowan, who bowed his head deeper than Aelin expected. Then she introduced Lysandra, explaining who she was and what she had become to Aelin, to her court. Adian watched them, his face tight, his lips a thin line. Their eyes met. 10 years later, and they were all sitting together at a table again, no longer children, but rulers of their own territories. 10 years later, and here they were, friends despite the forces that had shattered and destroyed them. Aelin looked at the kernel of hope glowing in that dining room, and lifted her glass. To a new world, the Queen of Terrasen said. The King of Otterlin lifted his glass, such endless shadows dancing in his eyes, but there, a glimmer of life.
To freedom.
Chapter 87. The Duke survived. So did Vernon. A third of Morath had been blown out and a good number of guards and servants with it, along with two covens and a lead Lochan. A solid loss, but not nearly as devastating as it might have been. Manon herself had spilled 3 drops of her own blood in thanks to the three-faced goddess that most of the covens had been out on a training exercise that day. Manon stood in the Duke's council chamber, hands behind her back as the man ranted. A major setback, he hissed at the other men who were assembled, ward leaders and councilmen. It would take months to repair Morath, and with so many of their supplies incinerated, they would have to put their plans on hold. Day and night, men hauled away the stones piled high above the ruins of the catacombs. Searching, Manon knew, for the body of a woman who was no more than ash, and the stone she'd borne.
Manon had not even told her 13, who now limped northward with that stone.
Ringleader,
the Duke snapped, and Manon lazily turned her eyes toward him.
Your grandmother will be arriving in 2 weeks. I want your covens trained with the latest battle plans.
She nodded. As you will it. Battles. There would be battles. Because even now that Dorian Havilyard was king, the Duke had no plans to let go. Not with this army. As soon as those witch towers were built and he found another source of shadow fire, Aelin Galathinius and her forces would be obliterated. Manon quietly hoped that a lead would not be on those battlefields. The council meeting was soon over, and Manon paused as she walked past Vernon on her way out. She put a hand on his shoulder, her nails digging into his skin, and he yelped as she brought her iron teeth close to his ear.
Just because she is dead, Lord, do not think that I will forget what you tried to do to her.
Vernon paled.
You can't touch me.
Manon dug her nails in deeper.
No, I can't,
she purred into his ear. But Aelin Galathinius is alive. And I hear that she has a score to settle. She yanked out her nails and squeezed his shoulder, setting the blood running down Vernon's green tunic before she stalked from the room.
What now?
Asterin said, as they studied the new Airy they'd commandeered from one of the lesser covens.
Your grandmother arrives, and then we fight in this war?
Manon gazed out the open archway to the ashy sky beyond.
For now we stay. We wait for my grandmother to bring those towers.
She didn't know what she'd do when she saw her grandmother. She glanced sidelong at her second. That human hunter. How did he die? Asterin's eyes gleamed. For a moment she said nothing. Then,
he was old. Very old. I think he went into the woods one day and lay down somewhere. And never came back. He would have liked that, I think. I never found his body.
But she'd looked. What was it like? Manon asked quietly. To love. For love was what it had been. What Asterin, perhaps alone of all the Iron Teeth witches, had felt. Had learned.
It was like dying a little every day. It was like being alive, too. It was joy so complete it was pain. It destroyed me and unmade me. And forged me. I hated it because I knew I couldn't escape it. And knew it would forever change me. And that witchling. I loved her, too. I loved her in a way I cannot describe, other than to tell you that it was the most powerful thing I've ever felt. Greater than rage, than lust, than magic.
A soft smile.
I'm surprised you're not giving me the obedience, discipline, brutality speech. Made into monsters.
Things are changing, Manon said.
Good, Asterin said. We're immortals. Things should change. And often. Or they'll get boring.
Manon lifted her brows, and her second grinned. Manon shook her head and grinned back. Chapter 88. With Rowan circling high above the castle on watch, and with their departure scheduled for dawn, Aelin took it upon herself to make one last trip to Elena's tomb as the clock struck 12. Her plans, however, were ruined. The way to the tomb was blocked by rubble from the explosion. She'd spent 15 minutes searching for a way in, with both her hands and her magic, but had no luck. She prayed Mort hadn't been destroyed, though perhaps the Skull Doorknocker would have embraced his strange immortal existence coming to an end at last. The sewers of Rifthold, apparently, were as clear of the Vog as the castle tunnels and catacombs, as if the demons had fled into the night when the king had fallen. For the moment, Rifthold was safe. Aelin emerged from the hidden passageway, wiping the dust off her.
You two make so much noise, it's ridiculous.
With her fey hearing, she'd detected them minutes ago. Dorian and Kaol were seated before her fireplace, the latter in a special wheeled chair that they'd acquired for him. The king looked at her pointed ears, the elongated canines, and lifted a brow.
You look good, Majesty.
She supposed he hadn't really noticed that day on the glass bridge, and she'd been in her human form until now. She grinned. Kaol turned his head. His face was gaunt, but a flicker of determination shone there. Hope. He would not let his injury destroy him. I always look good, Aelin said, plopping onto the armchair across from Dorian's.
Find anything interesting down there?
Kaol asked. She shook her head. I figured it wouldn't hurt to look one last time, for old time's sake. And maybe bite Elena's head off, after she got answers to all her questions. But the ancient queen was nowhere to be found. The three of them looked at each other, and silence fell. Aelin's throat burned, so she turned to Kaol and said, With Maeve and Parrington breathing down our necks, we might need allies sooner rather than later, especially if the forces in Morath block access to Eelway. An army from the southern continent could cross the narrow sea within a few days and provide reinforcements. Push Parrington from the south while we hammer from the north. She crossed her arms. So I'm appointing you an official ambassador for Terrasen. I don't care what Dorian says. Make friends with the royal family, woo them, kiss their asses, do whatever you have to do. But we need that alliance. Kaol glanced at Dorian in silent request. The king nodded, barely a dip of his chin.
I'll try.
It was the best answer she could hope for. Kaol reached into the pocket of his tunic and chucked the eye toward her. She caught it in a hand. The metal had been warped, but the blue stone remained.
Thank you,
he said hoarsely. He was wearing that for months, Dorian said as she tucked the amulet into her pocket.
Yet it never reacted, even in peril. Why now?
Aelin's throat tightened. Courage of the heart, she said. Elena once told me that courage of the heart was rare, and to let it guide me. When Kaol chose to... She couldn't form the words. She tried again. I think that courage saved him, made the amulet come alive for him. It had been a gamble, and a fool's one, but it had worked. Silence fell again. Dorian said,
So here we are.
The end of the road, Aelin said with a half-smile.
No,
Kaol said, his own smile faint, tentative.
The beginning of the next.
The following morning, Aelin yawned as she leaned against her gray mare in the castle courtyard. Once Dorian and Kaol had left last night, Lysandra had entered and passed out in her bed with no explanation for why or what she'd been doing beforehand. And since she was utterly unconscious, Aelin had just climbed into bed beside her. She had no idea where Rowan had curled up for the night. But she wouldn't have been surprised to look out her window and spy a white-tailed hawk perched on the balcony rail. At dawn, Adian had burst in, demanding why they weren't ready to leave.
To go home.
Lysandra had shifted into a ghost leopard and chased him out. Then she returned, lingering in her massive feline form, and again sprawled beside Aelin. They managed to get another 30 minutes of sleep before Adian came back, and chucked a bucket of water on them. He was lucky to escape alive. But he was right. They had little reason to linger. Not with so much to do in the north, so much to plan and heal and oversee. They would travel until nightfall, where they'd pick up Evangeline at the Felix's country home, and then continue north, hopefully uninterrupted, until they reached Terrasen.
Home. She was going home.
Fear and doubt curled in her gut, but joy flickered alongside them. They'd readied themselves quickly, and now all that was left, she supposed, was goodbye. Kaol's injuries made taking the stairs impossible, but she'd crept into his room that morning to say goodbye, only to find Adi and Rowan and Lysandra already there, chatting with him and Nezrin. When they'd left, Nezrin following them out, the captain had merely squeezed Aelin's hand and said,
Can I see it?
She knew what he meant, and had held up her hands before her. Ribbons and plumes and flowers of red and gold fire danced through his room, bright and glorious and elegant. Kaol's eyes had been lined with silver when the flames winked out.
"It's lovely,"
he said at last. She'd only smiled at him and left a rose of gold flame burning on his nightstand, where it would burn without heat until she was out of range.